So where do we go from here now?
So let's see, you just got out of Des Moines, Iowa.
Yeah, then they sent me to Asheville, North Carolina. And I had asked for a ball player who was one of the better ball players I had in the minor leagues, a boy by the name of Cal Emery. Big first baseman, kind of awkward looking, but you put a man on third with less than two outs and you had to run. I don't care who was pitching. He was one of the best I'd ever seen. And he wound up managing for the Phillies later on, but Bob Carpenter didn't like him, and I kept telling him, this guy can play first base for the Phillies. He wasn't a bad first baseman, but he could swing that bat. Left-handed hitter. But they never really gave him a good shot. So while I was there, I had the good fortune of meeting Dr. Billy Graham and his wife, who lived right outside of Asheville at the time. And while I was at Des Moines, I met Roy Rogers. And then later on, I met Gene Autry. And I got pictures over there in the service with Joe Louis, Sugar Ray Robinson, Rocky Marciano. We were playing in Baltimore one time, and our little third baseman, this is kind of jumping around a little bit here, I hope you don't mind. But we had Johnny Dubek was our ball player, third baseman, and he used to get his hair cut with Perry Como. And Perry Como was performing in Baltimore at the time, and he asked him, would he come out to the ballpark? And he said, sure. So, of course, we all got around him out at the mound in Baltimore. And he talked to the fans, you know, and he said, you know, he said, I used to be, and I remember this is all true. He said, I used to be a pretty good ball player myself. And he turned around in a new suit, took off and slid into second base. And those fans went crazy. Of course, he had to sing a song or two, too. But when he slid into second base and got up and dusted himself off and everybody hollered, safe, it's just a nice guy. Yeah.
And then you went back to Des Moines for another year after you were at Asheville?
Yeah, after Asheville, they sent me back to Des Moines because, you know, I was kind of a little bit popular, I guess, there from the year before. And then at the end of the year, I heard that they were going to draft Gene Mauch out of the Boston Braves organization to become the manager of the Phillies. And I had made a pact with Andy Semenik, the catcher for the Phillies. If he ever got to manage the Phillies, I would be one of his coaches. And if I ever got to manage, he would be one of my coaches. Well, when they drafted Gene Mauch out of the organization, I thought, oh, this is it. Politics are coming in now. So that's when I hung him up, 62. So I had 22 years, so that was enough. That's when I called it quits. And I was glad I did. I finally got to spend time with my family and watch my kids grow up a little bit and play with them and do the things that a father should do. And that's about the end of my story. Is there anything else you can think of that...
Sure. I got some questions. I'll kind of start at the beginning.
Sure. You go right ahead.
So when you were growing up in Philadelphia, were you an Athletics fan or a Phillies fan?
Neither one, really. I didn't follow them that much. I was more concerned with playing for my Sandlot team. We had a little team called the Tulip Tigers, a good little team. And we played all around the city, black teams, white teams, and just all over the place. Yeah, I enjoyed that. It was good life as a kid.
So you didn't go to many ball games?
No, I don't think I've ever been to the ballpark. If I did, I don't remember it at all, but I don't think I went out to either one of them.
Did you have a big family?
Pardon?
What size family did you have?
I was the only child. I had a wonderful mother and dad, and a terrific dad. I would be playing high school baseball somewhere in the city, maybe out West Philadelphia, some players out there, and he was a grease maker, and after work, he would get my Sandlot uniform, my local uniform, put it in the car, drive all the way out to West Philly, watch me play the baseball game, the high school baseball game. And then when that was over, I'd get in the car and change my clothes, put on my Tulip Tiger uniform, and drive me back to play the game where we were playing that night. Yeah, quite a dad. Yeah, he was hard on me, though. I remember playing in a game somewhere. I hit a couple of home runs, and the next time I come up, I struck out and tried to explain to him. It was getting twilight, and I said, this guy's throwing hard, and I couldn't see the ball. Nah, he said, don't tell me that. He's just too much stuff for you. Same guy I'd hit the home runs off of, but anyway, I guess he meant well with it. But he was a wonderful dad.
What was it like growing up during the Great Depression?
Pardon?
Did the Great Depression affect you much when you were growing up?
No, not too much, because they said my dad was a grease maker. He never had any money, but he had a steady job. He worked all through everything. And I wasn't a kid that needed a lot of things. All I wanted in my life was a bicycle, and he got me that. And during the winter, one time I won a pair of hip boots, and he drove out through the heavy snowstorm up to get me a pair of hip boots so I could play out in the snowdrift in the backyard. I had a little dog called Woots. Lady was her name, but I called her Woots. And my dad, you know, very, very clever, very handy, good at everything. I mean, electrical work, plumbing work, carpentry work, automobile work, just a natural. And he built a little ramp up to our back window that went out into our little small backyard. And he took a pane of glass out of that window and cut an inner tube and tacked it around that, and then put a slit in it. And then pushed the dog through that once or twice. And that's all it took. So whenever she had to go, she'd go down the basement steps by herself, go over, climb up that little ramp and through the window and outside, back in. Now I couldn't have been any more than 8, 9, 10 years old at the most. And she was a good dog. And I used to take her rat hunting down the city dumps. This has nothing to do with baseball, but this is growing up. And she'd wait for me like I'm home from school. And we'd go down the city dump not the city dump, but it was their dump area in our neighborhood. And she would start smelling around where the rats were. And rats always have one hole above the other. And she'd start digging frantically at the top hole, so I'd find the bottom hole. And I'd plug it up, and I'd go down and get water from the swamp down there, and just keep pouring it in the top hole until here come this rat. He'd come out or drown. And oh, she'd grab it, shake it, and throw it, just had a ball with it. And come home, my mother would give her a glass of milk, or a saucer of milk, with an egg or two in it. She'd mix it all up in there, and that was her treat. So that was the way we had fun.
What were your parents' names?
My mother's name was Ella, and my dad's name was Charles. Now, I never knew whether it was either Frederick or Ferdinand, because every time I'd say, Dad, it'd be Frederick one time or Ferdinand another, because they were German. And my mother's maiden name was Krogman, Krogman. She was from Baltimore. And she knew Babe Ruth. She grew up across the street from Babe Ruth, really, from that home. And she said when he was 13 years old, he used to come in her dad's, was kind of a saloon, an eating place, I don't know. And he'd grab the guy's beer, grab the guy's cigars, and run out. Just a big 13-year-old sort of bully-like. But boy, he could swing that bat. I met him at Syracuse, by the way, in 46.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
Well, they were coming around with the Ford Motor Company. And we all had to stand up at home plate. And they had him there. I remember it was the summertime, and he had a heavy overcoat on. Looked real frail, real thin. And the fans asked if he would swing a bat for them. And he picked up a bat, and he said, I'm sorry, I just can't do it. Because cancer really had him then. And I wish then I'd asked to have a photograph with him. But, at that time, you don't think of these things. But that was probably one of my greatest thrills in baseball. When my first game in Yankee Stadium, when I stood at home plate, looked down at the plate, and I thought, Charlie, you're standing here where Babe Ruth stood, and Lou Gehrig. And I just thought, you don't belong here. This is hallowed ground here. And I think my first bat, I think I flied out to Joe DiMaggio in center field. I don't remember exactly, but yeah, that, I had goosebumps when I stood there at home plate. I really did. It just, I just thought that I shouldn't be here. This is where Babe Ruth stood. You know, I was so in awe.